91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. If you own or rent a condo, you'll want to hear today's program. We're at your service and ready for calls about the often bewildering world of associations and the rules which govern them. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. In our studio is condo and association attorney Donna Berger. She's an authority on many property issues. How does a rebounding real estate market affect the value of occupied dwellings? And Berger stresses the importance of due diligence when hiring or contracting for building and property services. Can or should an association board grant hardship exemptions for residents struggling with unemployment or illness? Listen for answers next on Topical Currents. First, NPR and regional news. And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with a smiling Bonnie Berman here. Well, we're at your service this afternoon. Phone lines are open for questions about condominium. It's a private joke.
Yes.
For questions about condominium and homeowner association issues, as well as timeshare and mobile home issues.
And, of course, there are plenty of those. With us is attorney, blogger, and frequent contributor Donna Damasio Berger, a shareholder at the law firm of Becker and Poliakoff.
And our number, if you'd like to call in, we're at your service, free advice, 1-800-247-9576, 1-800-247-9576. Also, it's a little quicker to go email. It's radio@wlrn.org. radio@wlrn.org.
Okay. And we just want to say that our guest, attorney Donna Berger, gives help as best she can, but in no way purports to impart specific legal advice. So if warranted, we ask that you consult experts. So welcome, Donna.
Welcome to you, too.
This must be about our fifth or sixth program.
Good to be here.
Oh, at least. Well, last time you were here, it was June, and we talked about how homeowner associations should prepare for hurricane season. And now we've survived, miraculously, another.
I made that prediction on the air that we wouldn't get hit, didn't I?
Oh, well, gee, usually that jinxes it, but good. I don't remember, but anyway, we did. So what should homeowner associations do with these assets now that they may have used for hurricane season that now are assets for the winter months?
Well, you know, every year that goes by that we're not impacted by a hurricane is another year where boards can become a little too complacent mm-hmm. about the possibility of being impacted. And at some point, let's be honest, our luck is going to run out. So this is the perfect time now. You've been through hurricane season. You've got time to sit and do what we call benchmarking, where a community really does need to take stock of the current condition of the community, take date-stamped video and photos, work with experts. Our firm does benchmarking. There's engineers that benchmark. But it is important for these communities to understand that at some point they will be impacted. And by having a benchmarking study of what their community looks like now before it's damaged is going to be incredibly important for their claim.
So this is a good time to do that.
Absolutely.
And what does one do if you're not on the board? What do? You just, if you're a resident who's listening now and their building is not benchmarking or knows nothing about it, what do they do? Go to a meeting and say, we should be benchmarking?
Absolutely. If you're not on the board and you come up with these ideas, and hopefully you have a receptive board, bring it up at a board meeting. If your board's not receptive to these things, run for the board and make a difference.
Are you on a board of directors in your condo or co-op or a resident or a manager with a question for our expert, Donna Damasio Berger? You can call us 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-9576.
Or would you like to get off the board? Is there a way to do that also?
Or that too. Or you can email us at radio@wlrn.org.
Donna, tell me, what's the most frequent cause of litigation among condo and homeowners association parties?
Well, the most frequent cause of disputes, Joe, is typically relating to the election process, and we are right in the middle of election season for condos and homeowners associations. So not so much litigation, but you will see a lot of disputes and arbitration regarding elections, people who feel that the elections have not been held fairly, that their ballots have been discounted, in homeowners associations that use proxies, that there's been some manipulation of the proxies. Other disputes tend to center on finances. Are the finances being properly managed in the community? Other litigation, when we're talking strict litigation, you're probably looking at commercial disputes. You know, association paid for a roof project and it went sour. It may be a litigation against the developer for construction defects.
How important it is for a board of directors? Do they get any training to be on the board of directors? Are they supposed to?
That is a great question. The level of experience on these boards runs the gamut. You know, I've met former Fortune 500 CEOs who've served on their volunteer community association board. And then you have people, you know, you have some college students serving on these boards. So the level of experience does vary greatly.
Mm-hmm.
Boards are not required to be trained. They have to be certified, which means they can either take a class or they can sign a certificate saying that they've read and understand the documents. We urge every board member, both old and new, to attend classes because the laws change each year, best practices change each year, so it's important to stay up to date.
You've talked about due diligence in some of the material sent to us. Just how much fiduciary responsibility does a board member hold, and how is diligence measured? Your diligence might be less than mine.
Yeah. Board members are fiduciaries. They owe a duty of responsibility to the members who elected them. They are not held to a standard of perfection. They don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be perfect to sit on your condominium or cooperative or homeowner association board, but you do have to be reasonable. And they're held to a reasonable standard. And I use the example, I remember one board member once upon a time hired, you ever see the people on the corner with the "I'll work for food" sign?
Mm-hmm.
And they hired this particular board president, hired that person to go up and fix their condo roof. Not something a reasonably prudent businessman or woman would do.
Now, are they liable?
They can be.
So under what circumstances can a director be liable, either a board member or, you know, president, whatever, officer?
Financial misdealing, conflict of interest, fraud, theft. Again, when you're talking about the reasonableness standard, it's harder when you're using what we call the business judgment rule. If a board decides I'm going to go with company X rather than company Y, they've vetted them, they're both legitimate companies, they don't have a conflict, they just happen to like X, you can't sue that director because you think Y is a better company. But the example I gave of hiring someone off the street with no license, no experience to go up and tinker with the roof is something that is going to expose a director to personal liability, could expose them.
So what could arise if an unlicensed, non-bonded contractor should really screw up a job or not have a permit or not deliver in a reasonable time?
Lots of different things. You can damage the property. The roof can be damaged. They can hurt themselves.
But what actions by the board? Or against the board?
Well, the board will be, if the contractor damages the roof, the result is going to be the association and the residents are going to be dealing with the fallout of a roof that's not performing, that's leaking or in complete failure. If the unlicensed contractor injures himself or herself, the result is going to be a lawsuit against the board by that contractor. If that unlicensed contractor damages other people's property or hurts someone, there's going to be a suit against the board for negligent hiring.
So all of these things require lawsuits.
Well, I like what you're thinking. They don't require them. They often result in.
They result in them. Right? But I mean, in order to take an action, it requires that you bring suit, right?
Yes. I mean, other actions could follow, including we're so fed up with a board that would make these decisions. We're going to recall them. We're going to vote them out of office. I mean, there are other things that may also result. But if somebody wants to be made whole or feels that there's a chance to pursue and collect a monetary judgment, they're going to sue.
You know,
if a board member had hidden, say, a criminal record or something in his past, could he be recalled from that?
Well, board members are not eligible to serve on the board if they're convicted felons whose civil rights have not been restored for 5 years or more. So if that's the case, they're automatically off the board. If it comes to light that that's the case, mm-hmm. you don't need to recall them. They're off the board, and what happens is their seat needs to be filled.
I want to talk about this 55-plus community. It's funny because we just got an email, but I had this question. If someone lives in a 55-plus community and dies and leaves the apartment to somebody who's not 55 yet, what can and can't, I mean, what happens?
Well, there is a 80-20 rule in housing for older persons communities, and basically is that in order to qualify as housing for older persons, you need at least 80% of the residents to be age 55 or older, which leaves what? It leaves a 20% cushion, and that 20% cushion is for surviving spouses.
I see. So then they could stay there.
Right.
But what if it's not a spouse? In this case, the email was about a spouse. If she's left the apartment before she's 55, but if, you know, you leave it to your niece.
And adult children who inherit.
Right.
Surviving spouses and adult children who inherit. Now, we could say, well, what if it's not a spouse? What if it's a long-term partner
right.
who's living there? I mean, I would urge associations to use common sense with this. They could take a very hard-line approach, which may expose them to liability again, or they can take a more common sense approach. The one thing they don't want to do, Bonnie, in 55 and over, is if they're at an 80 or 90% mark and a realtor comes in with a younger person who's never lived in the community before, to use that cushion for that purpose.
I see. So they should use it for cases where a
Correct.
Spouse passes away. We're speaking with Donna DiMaggio-Berger. She is a shareholder in the Community Association Practice Group of Becker and Polyakov. And we have lots of calls we're going to get to you on Topical Currents after this short break.
And we resume our At Your Service discussion. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman and attorney Donna Berger, we're talking about condominium and homeowners associations and all the potential problems that can ensue by living in such communities. Our telephone number, 1-800-743-9576. And the email is...
radio@wlrn.org.
Okay, we have it right that time.
There we go.
Let's take Gerald in Key West. Hello, Gerald. Hi.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes. My question is I'm paying close to $2,000 a year in fees, and I've had to put two roofs on the unit, and they're supposed to cover all that. And so the last time when they didn't do it, they expected my homeowner's insurance to do it, which my insurance covered it. But I quit paying my fees. And so then they went and they put a lien on my condo, and then they want to foreclose on my condo and sell it. And I went through a bunch of Yahoo stuff, you know, I mean, I paid a lot of money. But what happens if this is a continual problem? I mean, the bylaws say they're supposed to cover everything that on the exterior. All right, that's the roof. It's got brick siding. They cut the grass, and they empty the dumpster, and that's about it. And I'm paying a lot of money for that. Do I have any recourse? I mean, if this should happen again, can I just turn around and file suit against the homeowners association for not performing?
Gerald, yes, you can, but let's back up. One of the things I always warn association members who have a potential problem with their board is that you cannot stop paying. Not paying is not an option, okay? Because what's going to happen is you will be linked in foreclosed, as you saw. So you have to pay regardless. Now, if you have a cause of action, which it sounds like you have, we talked about it earlier, Joe was mentioning a breach of fiduciary duty claim that the board is not maintaining, if I heard you correctly, board's not maintaining the common elements the way they're supposed to. That's a separate action, but never, ever, ever stop paying your assessments.
I see.
When you're in a dispute, they are two different things, because you, as
you,
I'm sure
then
you
you're the bad guy right away.
Well, but exactly, and you're going to wind up with attorney's fees and cost, and you know.
I just went through all that.
Yeah.
Trust me, $5,000.
Now, in addition to bringing your suit, I'm sure you're motivated to see a change on your board, right?
Well, I don't want. I mean, if something should happen on the exterior of the building, don't tell me I'm supposed to go and file an insurance claim or pay for it out of my pocket. I'm paying you these dues to take care of this. This is your responsibility.
Right. It sounds like they're shirking their responsibility and shifting it to the owners, which means you probably need to vote in a board that understands what their responsibilities are as outlined by the statute and their documents.
Right.
Okay, we have lots of callers.
All right, thank you very much.
Good luck, okay. Gerald.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
We have an emailer, Debbie. I guess it's several questions, but let's start with one. Our co-op members enjoy doing odd jobs around the building and grounds. Is this a problem?
No, it's great. I mean, volunteerism is a wonderful way to bring communities together, but I would urge the board to get involved with that, make sure that volunteer activity is covered under their insurance policies, make sure that the volunteer activity, that the volunteers are actually suited to the activities they're doing. So you mm-hmm. don't want somebody with knee, hip, or back problems doing heavy-duty landscaping in the
right.
community. And if you've got any volunteer activity that concerns security, then you're going to want to make sure you very much go through the scope of what those volunteers should and shouldn't be doing.
I don't understand her first question. Explain the advantages, if any, to being a not-for-profit corporation.
It's not really applicable. But the benefits to having volunteers is in your community, and we saw this a lot during the recession, is that you can cut down on some costs with volunteers doing certain things that you would otherwise pay for. But again, you need to exercise common sense.
And we'll move along to more calls. Excuse me. Oops, I'm sorry. I accidentally cut off Jack. If he'll call back, we'll give you a preference. Line two, Stephanie, Miami Beach. Hi.
Hello. My question is about a board member that was elected that makes decisions that could potentially allow for abuse. And he's very bullying. He swears in the board meetings. He monitors the management company's emails. He is a private investigator. He sends emails to everyone and just signs at the board members, and it's really uncomfortable. We tried to get him off the board, but we have a lack of people running, and we also have a building that's majority of the people are from South America, and they're renting their landlords that don't live on premise, so they don't see the abuses. They just see his emails, you know, bragging about everything he does, but they're offensive. And he also, we have cameras in the building. And because he lives off property, he views these cameras. There's a live web stream. And I brought up in the meeting that I felt that that was very uncomfortable and it could allow for abuse. I didn't call him a predator or anything like that. I just think it allows for possible abuse. And is there any laws about cameras being streamed live off property? The lawyer said it was perfectly legal for the board to be able to live view. But I was hoping maybe because he lives in out of state and he's viewing these, because he's constantly monitoring certain people and he's really bullying. And I think people are afraid of him.
Stephanie, are you on the board?
No, I'm
okay.
not.
Okay. And the cameras, are they filming the meetings or filming the common areas?
It is all of the common areas, including our multifunction room.
Okay.
And I don't think anybody in the building has a problem with security viewing it. It's him, because he's constantly calling security if he doesn't like somebody, et cetera.
Well, clearly his board service has become more than just serving on
the
board.
Why do condos attract so many nosy people?
If we only had the answer to that question, we could spend all day talking about that. A couple different things. Obviously, he is going to say that he is viewing the cameras and using them under the guise of security. The one thing I would urge this board to do and to consider, it's much harder to get someone off the board. Only the members can recall a director, and you've indicated that you've got a lot of out-of-town owners, so that may be difficult. But the board itself can remove this individual as the president. You did say he was the president, correct?
No, he's the vice president.
A vice president. But you can remove him as any officer, which gives him an extra layer of authority. So that's one option. The other option is for the board to create policies and protocols. Particularly, you indicated that he's used some not courteous communications. So urge the board to create protocol on board member communications, including how those videotapes are to be viewed. I mean, this is not a problem that's not solvable, but it will take the rest of the board stepping up to create policies and protocols and perhaps removing this individual as an officer.
Some of these condo board members can be like Barney Fife.
Well, and I think the question, I'd like you just to pursue it a little more about a member doing a recall. I feel that some of the board members, he's really got them by the throat. He's got information on them, and I'm not trying to be like spy conspiracy theory. But a lot of the board members they cower down to him. It's very obvious in the meetings when he's swearing and yelling. I think they would be afraid to do this. Is it one member can recall, or does it have to be the majority of the members have to recall?
You need a majority, but I will tell you, I've seen communities in worse shape, and they have been able to recall. So my best advice to you is round up your neighbors, even if they're out of town. You know, email them, mail them, and get done what needs to get done.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
You have another emailer?
No.
Then we'll move along to Thomas in Miami. Hello, Thomas.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
My question to you is regarding dogs. Our condominium is full of dogs, and on our bylaws, it says no pets allowed. And we seem that we have a big problem with that, and we try to resolve it, and there is no issue, and it seems like there is no government policy regarding dogs. So can you tell me exactly what can we do about it?
Well, Thomas, you can restrict pets and you can restrict dogs in your community. Some of the dogs you see in your community may not be pets per se. They may be what we call emotional support animals or service animals. If you're not on your board, I would ask your board members, hey, I thought we were a no-pet community and I see all these dogs. Why are they here? Sometimes you see dogs and pets in no-pet communities because previous boards have failed to enforce the restriction. So that presents all sorts of enforcement challenges. Doesn't mean you cannot recommence enforcement, but it takes some doing. So the first step is finding out why these animals are in the community. Are they emotional support and service animals?
No, they are not, because we only have one dog for one person who was a handicap.
Uh-huh.
So we allowed that person to have the dog. That wasn't the problem. But since then, it was an increase of dogs, you know, kind of small and medium sizes, and we tried to enforce it, and then we spoke to the management company. I'm on the board anyway.
Okay.
So the manager tried to find out through DVPR on all these companies, and he told us that really nothing we can do about it because there is no legality for us to find those owners who have the dogs. So nothing we can do about it.
Well, I disagree, Thomas.
Okay.
If you have the proper authority in your declaration to restrict pets,
yes,
then you can. But now, that doesn't mean that you won't have enforcement challenges if your previous boards have been lax in enforcing it. But to be told that you as a private residential community cannot enforce your private use restrictions regarding pets is not correct.
But Donna, what happens if these people have them and they've allowed them, and then all of a sudden they come and they say you can't have them?
Well, that's a good point. And you will have problems with enforcing existing pets. But you will need to do what we call republication, which is the board getting together, saying we're going to once again start enforcing this, draw a line in the sand and start enforcing from that point
forward.
Can grandfather some of them in?
Yes, absolutely. But that, you know, at some point with use restrictions, if it goes too far, the tide has turned and you're never going to be able to get it back. That happens often with leasing.
Staying on the subject of emotional support and service animals, is that still an issue with homeowners associations? And what can and can't be done?
Do you see me laughing?
I do. I see you laughing. I hear you laughing too.
It's a huge issue. It's a growing issue. I mean, all of us we see more dogs than ever on planes. I was at the Broward Center. One was barking a row away from me. I mean, everywhere you go, in restaurants, you're seeing more and more dogs. Emotional support animals are different than service animals. Service animals have to be trained. They have to have a certain skill set to assist with certain disabilities, including a mobility disability, vision, hearing, seizures. Those dogs and animals are typically trained to support those particular handicaps. Emotional support animals are where we get into a real murky area, and they don't need a special set of skills. As far as I'm concerned, they just need fur. I have a furry purse.
So I could have a wolf, theoretically.
Well, you bring up a point because, you know, it needs to be a reasonable accommodation. And at what point is what somebody needs for their emotional support unreasonable to their neighbors?
All right. We're going to take a break on that note on today's Topical Currents. Donna DiMaggio-Berger at Becker and Polyakov, and we'll be right back.
And Topical Currents returns. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. And we're talking about condos and HOAs. And it's an At Your Service program, so we have a lot of callers on the air. We're speaking with attorney Donna DiMaggio-Berger. And yes, she is distantly related to Jolton Joe DiMaggio. Where have you gone, Donna DiMaggio? Let's go to Bonnie. She's got an emailer here.
Okay, Robert wants to know, when you live in a hotel condo in Florida, as he was in Sunny Isles Beach, no one told the renters when exactly the place was closing down. Everybody was saying different months it was closing. No real documentation. Is there any law to give renters any certain time frame to move out of hotel condos, or is it only 72-hour notice?
Condo hotels, Bonnie, are sort of the wild, wild west, and we've talked a lot in the industry about whether or not they warrant having a separate statute. People who have bought, and this product has sort of dropped off. I see that it's resurfacing a little bit. It was a hot product years ago for real estate developers. You really get the worst of both worlds because you're in a condo, you've got the constraints of the condo statute, but then you have all the other issues associated with a public accommodation like a hotel. To answer the question, there's not a specific statute. It would be the typical landlord-tenant Chapter 83, you know, that they could look at, also the terms of their lease and the operating agreement with the hotel operator. But it is a very confusing real estate product, in my opinion, for that reason. You have OSHA issues with the, you know, hotel employees and other things that people think, well, I'm buying a condo, really, and I can rent, I have a better ability to rent it out because it's under this flag, whether it's the Ritz or what have you. It's not that simple.
Okay.
And next caller, this is Kenny in Kendall. Hi there.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having this show. Folks that live in condos have a tough cross to bear because whatever happens in the condominium is considered a civil matter. So there's no law enforcement, basically. And in our condominium, they took over, a group of homeowners took over in 2006. Since then till today, we've had 8 management companies, 7 law firms. And some of the things that have happened is one of the board members hired one of his buddy contractors, paid him over $100,000 over 2 years. To do roof repairs, and we have no receipts. And the DBPR...
what's that?
The Department of...
Business and Professional Regulation.
Okay.
Right, that is the only government agency that regulates condominiums. And they... I mean, it's in their laws that say that's against the law. You can't destroy receipts. They won't do anything. They won't produce financial statements. We have over $350,000 a year budget, even though we're only 103 units, and we have no elevators, no, you know, spas, nothing. And you know, they don't do what's our financial audit. They don't do, at the end of the year, they're supposed to do an audit and tell you where the money went. They won't do that. We had one management company who wrote checks to his own company without any signatures. the bank cashed the checks and the board is fine with it.
Well, Kenny, what you're laying out here is, unfortunately, we've heard it before. When you say civil matter, the first thing I thought about it, it's correct that typically, but it's more when you're dealing even with any sort of disputes, police who are called and come out to a community will often say, you know, this is a matter for your association. In terms of what your frustration with the DBPR, it's funny, Florida probably has more regulation than any other state. We do have the Division of Florida Condominiums. There is a compliance bureau. There is an ombudsman's office. So there are tools in Florida for condominium owners and cooperative owners to pursue complaints without having to lay out much, if any, money in these instances. Even with all of those resources at hand, you still see the type of frustration and challenges that Kenny's articulating. Really, you've got a couple options. One, you can go the route of recalling the board, waiting for the next election and getting a new slate put in. You can also combine efforts, organize your neighbors, create an ad hoc group of sorts, and hire your own attorney to sue the board for breach of fiduciary duty.
I understand that, but the problem I feel is that there's no enforcement. Even though we have all of these things you mentioned and all of these regulations, there's no enforcement. In other words, if you throw away a receipt or financial whatever of the board, there's a fine for that in law. And they won't enforce it.
Well, the best advice I could give you, and I don't disagree. Look, we have more than 60,000 associations in the state. Florida has one of the most populous community association demographic anywhere. And I would suggest you meet with your local legislator. You know, the division is a creature of the legislature. So if they're not living up to your expectations, they need to hear about it. And I would set up an appointment. All of the legislators, well, we're starting with committee week soon, but you can still catch them in their home district offices.
I can tell you that, I appreciate what you're saying, but we've met with our local commissioner, our local state senator, our local state representative. We've been contacting the governor's office when it was Chris and now Scott. And, you know, believe me when I tell you we have time. We have email and a phone, so we do.
Right.
We have, and this has been going on since 06. They hired an unlicensed, uninsured contractor, paid him $300,000. He hired two other contractors, gave them each $10,000. They're the ones that took out the permits because they were going to do the work without any permits. They didn't put insulation in half the buildings. There's 16 buildings altogether, and you know, and then that's when they hired that contractor to do repairs on the thing without any receipts. Since then, they hired another contractor. They paid him over $200,000 to do repairs to the roof that we just paid $300,000 for. And nothing happens. Believe me, we've gone to, you know, we've presented and sent emails and copies of email. Nobody cares. And then, you know, like I said, we've had eight management companies. So these guys, you know, and it's the same board
right.
of directors.
Well, I wish you luck. It sounds like you're taking all the right steps, and I wish you luck. I guess it's going to take something catastrophic to wake up your community to get this board out.
And next up, we have Laura in South Miami. Hi. Laura.
Hello. Oh, hi. Yeah.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Bonnie. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi,
Donna. Hi.
Calling because I have a unit in a 40-unit condo. We have no functioning board. We have officers named. We have no meetings. They pay the Department of Professional Regulation every January the fees, but there's no financial documents. There's no operating budget. There's no elections. There are no meetings. Some people have to pay their homeowner association fees, and some people don't. I've been able to see the bank statements. At $200 a month with 40 units, it's supposed to be around $8,000 a month.
Laura, are you in a condominium or a homeowners association?
I'm in a condo.
You're in a condo. So it's a mandatory association. If someone doesn't pay, they are subject to lien and foreclosure, correct?
Yeah, they have one of those proxy things, as in pay up in 30 days or we own you.
Okay. So why do you think you don't have meetings? Are you on the board?
No, there is no election either.
There's no. Well, you know what?
The developer still owns about 8 of the units.
Okay, well, here's your option, Laura. You can petition for a receiver. You don't have a functioning board. So you can take the necessary legal steps to file a petition for receivership and ask the state to appoint a receiver who will be paid to operate and administer your community. And maybe that's what you need to do to wake up your neighbors to say, we need to get people to serve on this board.
Yeah, everybody's actually offsite investors. None of us live here.
Well, I'm not a huge fan of receiverships, but in the case you just laid out, it makes the most sense to me.
That's great. Now, do I have to hire an attorney to do this?
No, you don't. You can go on the statutes. I mean, it'll be easier for you if you do.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, cool.
All right. Thanks. Good luck.
Thanks so much for the help.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and we have an emailer, Rose. I don't know if you're going to understand this, but here we go, Donna. Can you clarify the business judgment meeting rules based on the necessary maintenance doctrine, which I understand allows the board to meet on specific issues without having an official board meeting?
Well, there's a lot going on in that question.
And then she lists the criteria, and she says, does such a meeting need to be open to unit owners? Can other matters be discussed?
All right. So let's just talk about meetings. You know, people talk about sunshine laws and Florida Association. Sunshine laws pertain to governmental entities, but there is a sunshine component in all the shared ownership statutes, which is 718, 719, and 720. You should be having open meetings except for specific exceptions, okay? Your committee meetings, your board meetings should be noticed. They should be open. Now, what are the exceptions to that? If you are meeting with your lawyer and you're discussing litigation, you should still post notice, but you should let your members know that this meeting is taking place, but it should be a closed meeting. If you're discussing personnel issues, you're talking about the lawn guy or the bookkeeper or the manager, that also can be a closed meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, you should be having open meetings. There's a reason that the legislature wants members to have some input, to know what's going on. Most of the complaints we hear is that people don't ever show up to meetings.
Well, sometimes, is there a legal amount of time notice you're supposed to give to residents as to when a meeting is going to occur? I mean, what good is it if you put up a note on Friday evening that the board meeting is going to be on Saturday morning at 9?
Right. There's both statutory requirements and the governing documents. You go with the most notice, depending. But let's give an example. Typical board meeting is 48 hours notice.
Okay.
Unless your documents require something else.
Mm-hmm.
A special members meeting, typically 10 or 14 days in advance. Again, that's going to be driven by the individual documents. If you're going to be passing a special assessment or passing rules regarding unit use, you're going to need to give 14 days notice in advance. So there are certain requirements. You can't just say we're having a meeting in 3 hours.
Now,
for an emergency, those rules are off. But you can't say, well, we have an emergency because, you know, we need to discuss this contract when it's been pending. That's not an emergency. It needs to be a true emergency to waive the notice requirements.
And if it's not adhered to?
It's a violation.
And then
you probably get a slap on the wrist. I mean,
right,
you know,
okay.
That gets back to Kenny's venting about the cards are a little bit stacked on some of these things. And sometimes boards do set up rules and meetings at inconvenient times because they've had one too many people come and, you know, complain the entire
right.
meeting. So we see it.
We're talking to Donna DiMaggio-Berger from Becker & Polyakov. By the way, she has a blog, and that blog is, you need the www.communityassociationlawblog.com. That's www.communityassociationlawblog.com. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Donna DiMaggio-Berger from Becker & Polyakov were at your service about condo and homeowner association issues and community association issues. Okay, we were talking during the break, Donna, about classes that directors, prospective directors, or directors currently can take in order to get this information.
My firm, Becker & Polyakov, has taught 273 classes, free classes so far this year throughout the state. There are other law firms that teach them, management companies, the ombudsman's office does. There's no reason for any director not to take these classes. Also, we typically get a lot of people who are thinking about it. I just had a class and I had a couple people who were thinking about getting on their board. And that's a great way to sit and share stories, hear what's going on out there, learn best practices. So again, I mean, we have classes as detailed as anatomy of a water leak. Is a no pet building a thing of the past? Then we have broad-based board certification. We have budgeting and reserves. So if you look, there's any number of detailed classes.
And where do people find out about these classes?
Okay, I'm going to give a shameless plug. www.bplegal.com/events list all our classes. But if they Google condo classes, they can probably find it as well.
Slash classes, did you say?
Slash events.
Events, okay.
And another caller, Marcella in Boca Raton. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a few questions. I own two townhouses in Boyton.
Could you turn your radio down?
Sure.
What did they Google condo classes?
Better?
There we go. Ah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I own two townhouses in Boyton, and I recently went to the meeting association, and I noticed it was only like a few people. But I just have quick questions, and I think you covered a portion of those questions. But my concern is any right, like any homeowner, have the right to go and request the financials and review the numbers? And the reason I say that is because they submit the budget for next year, but they didn't submit any information on how much they spent during this year.
Yes, the answer, Marcella, is yes. Those are your documents. They're not the board's documents. They're not the lawyer's documents. They're not the management company's documents. They're your documents. Now, there are certain records that the association you're not entitled to see that are privileged. But in terms of financials, you are absolutely, as an owner, entitled to know where your common funds are being spent.
Okay. What are the exceptions? Employment records or something?
Employment records, social security numbers, any attorney-client work, attorney-client work product.
Okay, work but product. For example, if I want to know, like, if I want to see review the numbers, I'm able to do that.
You are able to do that. A couple different things. You want to look and see if the board has any particular policy on inspection. You're going to want to submit your request in writing.
Okay.
And if they don't, you're in a homeowners association or a condo?
Condo.
Okay, well, if they don't produce those records within a certain period of time, 10 days, they can be penalized for that. There are penalties.
Okay, because I heard, well, I'm new to the, I bought the condominiums last year, so I'm new to the board, like to the meetings, but I heard from other owners and they never submitted. And if you try to request information, it's like a threat, and I already felt that way when I requested. So it's a lot of things going on, and also like the board members are there for many years, and they never submit for any elections. They assume that nobody wants to participate. So is any way we can request that, like request?
Well, yes, you can. Let me back up. First of all, congratulations on getting involved, because that's exactly what you need to do. Number two, yes, you can request and petition for an election monitor. Now, if you don't have more people running than slots available, you won't have an election. So the starting point is getting your people and your neighbors interested in running for the board. But assuming that they are and that there's just some shenanigans going on, you should petition for an election monitor. The last thing I want to suggest, and I make this suggestion across the board, I know you were made to feel that even just a simple request was maybe confrontational, and that's unfortunate. But always start out in a friendly, open manner with the board. There's no reason to start out of the gate being hostile and making assumptions. Just, hey, you know, I want to see these documents. You always have the room to ratchet it up from there if you need to. But the starting point should be friendly, and it should start out on that tone rather than out of the – then you have nowhere to go. If you start out very combative and very hostile, you have nowhere to go.
Oh, definitely. No, and that's exactly what I point in the meeting, because I'm bored. I'm had other condominiums too, so I noticed and they always submit the actions. So, the forecast for the year, and I request that because I say, look, in the other association, they always submit. So I'm surprised and you don't do that here. It will be better for everybody to see the numbers, so it's a transparency on what's going on.
Well, good luck, Marcella.
Thank you, Marcella. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Donna, you mentioned that you're covering the issue of using drones inside private residential communities. Would you explain that, and is that legal, and what are you talking about?
You know, you're laughing when you're saying that. I really do. Listen, drones are everywhere. I don't want to sound like a
sci-fi. Don't go skinny dipping on Saturday night.
This is going to be drones and wearable technology, Google Glass. These are all the things that are on the horizon. There are hotels now that are using drones to deliver champagne to wedding guests.
That's different.
That is fun. That is fun. But what's going to happen is a lot of times with associations, one of the things they need to make sure is whether or not there's a violation on a balcony. So much easier to send a drone up to the 18th floor.
You mean like a barbecue?
To see if Mrs. Smith has a little hibachi on her balcony than for, you know, scaffolding or anything else. So I think you will see a couple things. I think you will see drone hobbyists that are using them in communities, and you have neighbors start to voice privacy concerns. And I think you're going to have associations starting to think, hey, it's a good idea to use these things for property inspections. We're already seeing it in real estate. I'm thinking about buying a drone company, Bonnie. What do
are you,
think? You
really?
No, I'm joking. But it makes sense.
Okay, we're short on time. Let's take... next caller.
Did Jack call back ever?
No, he didn't. And we tried. He was up for a while, and then he went off again. We tried. Fred in Homestead, I'm short on time. Go ahead.
Quickly, we're thinking of becoming first-time condo owners, and you all are kind of scaring us a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, after the show, are you still thinking about that, Fred?
Say that again?
I said, after the show, are you still thinking about that?
Yes, I think so, because you did say there's 50,000 of them out there, and you aren't talking to 50,000 people. But quickly, we'd like to see some financial information before we commit to one, and I've been looking on the Internet, and I can't see it from the state of Florida. Can you give me some direction of where I can see? Do they have to file?
That's
annually?
A great question to do your due diligence. And I just want to say quickly, I don't want to put you off buying in a condo. There's some incredibly well-run, happy, harmonious. Bonnie's making a face, but it's true. There's incredibly happy, harmonious condos and homeowners association. I happen to live in a happy homeowners association. You cannot have access to that information, but you can ask your potential seller to track down that information. And I always recommend that. When my sister was looking to buy a condo, I said, ask the seller for a copy of the budget. You want to see if there's full reserves. You want to go in the community. Look on the bulletin board. If there's a picture of the board president with a rope around his neck saying he needs to go, that's not a good sign that you're in a potentially happy community. So look around and get whatever you want, the budget, minutes from meetings, anything that owner would be entitled to. If they can get that secured and give it to you, that'd be great.
Okay, Fred,
good
thanks.
Luck.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
So much. Good luck.
Well, do we have contact information?
We do. We do. Things? Donna DiMaggio-Berger is a shareholder in the Community Association Practice Group of Beckerman Polyakov. She's an active member of CALL, which is an acronym for the Community Association Leadership Lobby. And her blog is www.communityassociationlawblog.com. We'll have a link to that on our website. Also, for classes, BP Legal, that's B as in Becker, P as in Polyakov, legal.com/events. Thanks so much, Donna.
Thank you. This was great. Thank
Must
you.
Must be tough having you living in the condo for that board.
With a drone.
And it's been a pleasure to have you along this hour. Hats off to those who called for advice. Apologies to those we couldn't get to. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical supervision by online producer Paul Leary. If you didn't catch the whole program, and wish you had, we have free audio downloads of the program at our website. That's WLRN.org. You'll find related links as well as discussions, photos, and more at the Topical Currents Facebook page. And check us out tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We'll update the issues and controversies surrounding architectural and land use in South Florida. With a rebounding condo market, preservationists and developers have resumed their battles over the raising of older structures. We'll have a distinguished panel on hand. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for making public radio your companion. Stay tuned next for Here and Now. For Bonnie Berman, this is Joseph Cooper. Here and Now from NPR News.